This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Smith corks one into right down the line. It may go. Go crazy, folks. Go crazy.
Bird struck him out looking. The Cardinals are going to Michigan to take on the Tigers.
Out to deep right. Yes, yes, yes.
Swing and a high drive to center field. Get up, baby. Get up, baby. Get up. Oh, yeah, baby. Freeze has just sent us in the game number 7.
Driven.
Jim Cromer.
They're talking about what you're talking about.
Welcome to Ruffled Feathers from the Two Birds on a Bat Show.
You are listening to Ruffled Feathers right here this week. Excited to have a guest on with me. He's been podcasting like crazy. I guess both of us have, to be honest with you, but we're coming to you from the patio studios. The original party place for St. Louis Cardinals fans everywhere since 1998, pre or post game, patios is the place to be. The show is brought to you by Patterson Tire and Service, a whole lot more than a tire store. All right, so you know what? I got horribly distracted by something today, and I can't... I know this is a baseball show. I know it's very focused on baseball, but my freaking Chicago Bears, it's such a distraction. Whatever they did this week, bringing in Andy Dalton... Oh my God, I can't get over it. And for those of you who know David Portnoy, you know, he's never short for words. He's always got something to say. And when you can stump him and you can make him raise his voice and pitch and not even know how to respond or ask the question, so you know you've done something horribly wrong. So this is David Portnoy reacting to the news that the Bears had brought in Andy Dalton.
What are you doing? What are these guys doing? What are you doing?
All right, so that's all I got to say about that. It's a distraction. I'm getting back on baseball now. I am sorry, folks. The Bears are just, this is what they do to you. They just tenderize you for a couple decades, so you're just kind of numb to this stuff. And just when you think it can't get worse, you hear something like this happening, and it's just baffling. But enough about that. We are talking about our Cardinals, and I have with me today Ben Cerruti of Birds on the Black. He does his new podcast, Conversations with Cerruti. He's been doing a lot of them lately. I've been enjoying them, especially when you bring a guest like our mutual friend Kyle on. But Ben, I know it's in the middle of your day, man, but I appreciate you jumping in today to help me help fill the big guy's seat, and that'd be Jim Cromer.
Hi, Ron. Happy St. Paddy's Day.
Yeah, that's right.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. I always just love talking baseball. So anytime, man, anytime.
All right. Well, I knew I could count on you. And Ben, one of the things that there's a lot of stuff to talk about, right? There's some anxiety, a lot of anxiety, really. Cardinals fans continuing to see Matt Carpenter's name in a spring training lineup. I don't know where your level of frustration, if you even have one, in regards to that. And the other, I think, is the concern of just the performance of Paul DeJong, for instance. That's been a hot button, too. So let's just get into those two, because that seems to be what Twitter's fired up about. And I think they've provided some air cover for Harrison Bader, because I'm not seeing as much, you know what I mean? I'm not seeing as much chatter around that guy as what I would normally do. And I think it revolves around, probably the frustration is around Matt Carpenter. Of course, there are concerns about the pitching staff as well. But let's just get your thoughts on that. He's in the lineup once again today at third base, batting third. Me personally, Ben, it's a spring training game. I don't really care too much, but we see it out there. There are some that are. But where do you stand on this?
Yeah, everybody's got to get their work in spring training. So if you've got a guy like Matt Carpenter, who in the past has been a guy who has been I call him top five hitters on your team, right? You want those top mm-hmm. five guys, the 6, 7, 8 guys, put them in whatever order you want. I don't really care so much. But those top five guys, he's been a top five hitter on your team for over half a decade. And if you can get him back to what he was, then he tremendously helps this team. He's the best left-handed hitter on the team, period, if he's back to what he was. Now, that being said, I don't know that he's going to be. I don't have much confidence that he will be. But I think in the spring, this is your time to see if that rotational hitting practice that he's put in this offseason has worked or not. For whatever reason, they don't have Hawkeye up in all the spring training stadiums. And and so you don't know exactly what he's done this spring in terms of, like, hitting the ball harder and all that. But the ones that they have gotten, it seems like he's hitting the ball as hard as he did back more in 2016, 17, 18, as opposed to the last 2 years. So, I mean, the data that's there is good. The results have been absolutely terrible, which leads us to what you said with Paul DeJong. The results there have been absolutely terrible as well. But, yeah, I can see a little concern about just middle infield in general, because if you don't have DeJong or Edman or Carpenter, if one or two of them aren't hitting, that's the weakest part of the minor leagues. You have nothing coming up to help you in the middle infield. I don't think Nolan Gorman's ready to take over second. Jose Rondon he's hit really well this spring, but I feel like he's kind of a Jairo Munoz level of defensive liability in the middle infield. I don't know that Max Maroff is going to help you at all either. Edmundo Sosa has shown a little bit of pop this spring, but not much at all. I mean, he had one like 107 off the bat the other day, that double in the left center gap. That was beautiful. I compared on Twitter that swing to an Edgar Renteria swing, which if he could be that for us, that'd be incredible. But I don't, one, think he will, and two, think he'll get the opportunity. So I can see where fans' frustration is, but I don't know. I think a lot of people like Tara and Alex on Chirps and for us at Birds on the Black, they've done a good job of just saying, hey, it's the spring. We don't know what guys are working on. You never hope to see a guy 1-for-21 or whatever Carpenter is this spring, because even when you're working on something, it shouldn't be that bad. But we don't know what people are working on, and spring doesn't matter so much. We don't see people freaking out over Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado being under 700 OPS is this spring either. I think Goldie's under 500, if I remember correctly, last time I looked. So I don't see people freaking out about that.
Yeah, so spring
people
training
just need something to freak out about.
Yeah, well, we sometimes we go seeking it, but you know, spring training stats are statistics that I rarely go to and pull up. I know that it's an extremely small sample size, and to your point, you know, a lot of this time, guys are just kind of getting their feel back, or they're experimenting with a different stance, maybe a new approach in terms of pitching. Maybe they're changing grips, or they're only going to use two pitches on a given outing. So I really, my anxiety level is generally low. The only anxiety level I have right now is we're still a couple weeks away from opening day, and I hate this part of spring training. I really do. I like it early on when you bring in a new name, like a Nolan Arenado or Goldschmidt or even Ozuna when they brought him over. I always like seeing those first couple games, just checking out that player in your Cardinals red. Beyond that, Ben, I don't know how these guys do it. And I don't know how they play every damn day in spring and then pick it right up when they start the season. Now, as far as what's going on with Matt Carpenter, look, I don't know. I know it's been a long time, you know, and I think you're right. You know, the mid last decade, you know, right in the middle of it, we had a really good leadoff hitter. And we had a pretty consistent performer, and then he dropped off. And it's really hard to imagine what, you know, you're just not seeing the results no matter what you try. And it's been really since September of 2018. He has not bounced back since then. And so we're quickly coming up on about 3 years when he went on that unbelievable hot streak. And he just hasn't been, he's been a shadow of himself, it seems, since. So I understand that's a lot of money they're committed to this year. They want to probably give him every opportunity to try to recover. I mean, Ben, I'll take 75% of who he used to be, and I think he'd be a decent left-handed bat coming off the bench.
Yeah, and I think 75% of what he used to be, I don't think that gets him the everyday role, but I think it allows him to get 300, 400 plate appearances.
Sure, and be useful. But
and maybe that's what's best.
I think that's all that's left. I think that's the best you can hope for. You know, it's got to be frustrating. I don't know what it's like to be in the mind of a player like that. If your body feels okay, but you know, just nothing's working for you. You're not seeing the results. So, yeah, I mean, frustrating. And then there's the concern over Paul DeJong. And that's what I was thinking about earlier. And even last night, Ben, when we connected, was, gosh, if he's experienced something like that where he's just falling off the table, you know, does Edman at some point in time need to shift over to short? And then you're kind of starting Matt Carpenter at second, or at least a platoon full of new players plus Matt Carpenter in and out of second base. You know, who's I could see that being messy, right? If he can't get it figured out quick. And I there's a lot to like about Paul DeJong, his steadiness on defense. I know maybe 2020 wasn't his best year, but he's pretty steady defensively. I don't expect the world from him offensively. And I think he's been put in a situation over the last couple of years where we've kind of had to have him there, right? We've had to have him batting cleanup, or had to have him batting fifth. Just like some of these other role players, I like to see him. Look, when I see Yadier Molina sixth or lower in the lineup, and I see Paul DeJong sixth or lower, it makes me happy, Ben, because I know we've got it figured out 2 through 4.
Well, yeah, and that's been hard to come across the last few years. Yeah, I really don't know what to make of their lineup right now. I feel like we need Matt Carpenter to be that leadoff hitter, or we need DeJong or O'Neill to be that four hitter behind the two big boppers. Because I feel like we've only got three or four of those, what I call those top five hitters in the organization right now. Like, if Carlson can be one, we've got three. If Edmund can get back to 2019 or what he's done this spring, or if O'Neill can get back to what he was when he first came up, or what he was that 1 month he got consistent playing time prior to 2020, or if Bader can be what he is against lefties, we have it against lefties. If Paul, I think I said Paul DeJong, if Paul DeJong can get back to being what he was, I feel like we've got that fourth. We could really use that fifth one. I was really hoping to get like a Jock Peterson or some known quantity for the outfield. But hey, I was going to kind of tie back in that Tyler O'Neill this spring. I mean, if he can do what he's done, I know Matt Graves just put up an article about on Redbird Rants about this iteration of Tyler O'Neill, granted it's 25 plate appearances, is the cleanup hitter the Cardinals need. Or the three hitter, if you wanted to split Arenado and Goldie, it depends on Schilt's preference. But he's that middle of the order guy that you've been missing. But yeah, it's a rough go right now, for sure.
I'm sure it is, and I don't know. Sometimes I look at some of the things that are worrying Cardinals fans, like the pitching staff, like and not really the bullpen. There are so many options there. You just wonder, like, at what point has this become a bad problem instead of a good problem to have, right? This is the time to tinker around the lineup and try to figure out what's your configuration going into opening day. And I don't know either. And I think that's why we've seen so much variance from day to day. And I don't know who that – look, if I had to make a lineup card today, Edmund's got to be batting leadoff. And probably make an argument for somebody else, but right now I'm probably putting Tommy Edman there. I can't figure out who's batting second, and I don't know. Goldschmidt and Arenado are 3 and 4 for me. You can switch them around if you want. I don't think it really matters. But
I hit Goldie in front of Arenado too.
Yeah, I mean that's probably what I would, and that's how I would write it out today. I like O'Neill. The thought of O'Neill being able to secure the fifth spot, based on what he's done so far, obviously the question on everybody's mind is, will this carry into regular play? Will this carry against a major league staff consistently? That's been his problem.
Yeah, and for me, I'm just trying to figure out who's going to be the on-base guy. If Carlson can be the on-base guy, maybe you go Carlson 1, Goldie 2, Arenado 3, O'Neill 4, Edmund 5, because for me, I don't know. My dad always talked about that fifth hitter being, you've got two on, two out, or two on, two out, first inning. Who do you want coming up? And you don't want a Matt Carpenter who's going to look for a walk. You don't want a high strikeout guy like an O'Neill or a Bader or a Thomas. I want a guy that's going to put the ball in play, and that leaves either Edman or Yachty.
Yeah.
And I honestly think at this point, Edmund's got a better chance of getting on base and driving in the runner than Yachty. Now, Yachty does probably a better job than anybody on the team of cutting down his swing and doing what he needs to do to try to get that runner in. It's just he's becoming less and less successful at it because of age and because of decline. And I love Yachty, but I mean that's just that's what the statistics have been saying. It has been happening the last few years.
But I don't know, like just in terms of Molina though, in a situation like that where you got to have a hitter up there that just knows what to do, and whether they're able to do it every time is a different story, right? But just knows and has that approach. I don't think there's anybody better on the team than him that just knows what to do. So having him, seeing him bat fifth doesn't give me much heartburn. But it'd sure be nice if you could put him lower in the order because you had 1 through 5 figured out. And it has been forever. It feels like it's been forever. We've been having this very similar conversation year over year about this offense. And it's just weird. It's just weird that this part of their game has struggled that much. I mean, just
collectively. Yeah, and it's weird because I feel like you've got pitchers that come up and just are lights out right away, you know? And we just haven't figured out the hitting side of things. Like, Bader came up and seemed like a flash in the pan until like last year he kind of picked it up a little bit more. And I know you wanted to get into more advanced stats versus old stats today. And that is a good argument to have both ways, I think, with just Harrison Bader in general. But like O'Neill kind of dropped off every year. DeYoung's dropped off every year. We don't seem to have that consistent guy come up, and we're hoping it's Carlson. We were hoping it was Tavares, and tragedy occurred. And
you point to several guys. Just, you could look at, you know, like Alan Craig fell off the radar, fell off the map.
That was injuries.
I just feel for the guys in their mind. Like your body can't do it anymore for whatever reason. You're just not seeing the results, but you're doing everything you can. And I know it's got to be frustrating. I was going to point to Stephen Piscotty being one of them too, where, came up kind of hot, but, you know, became an expendable part at some point in time. So just strange, but I do want to get into some numbers here with you, Ben, because I know you're close, way closer to that than I am. I accuse you of having more time. I know you don't, but you just know how to do it. But before we jump into that, I want to remind everybody you can find us on twobirdsonabat.com. Please click subscribe to that podcast. It takes only about 30 seconds. Best of all, it's free. You find us on Twitter at Birds on a Bat Show. Find us on Facebook. Just search Two Birds on a Bat. And who should we share it with this week, Ben? I'm always picking on the Orioles, the Pirates. Give me another fan base that just needs a little pick-me-up. Would it be the Mariners? Can we throw them in there? I might have already used them.
Yeah, before. The Mariners might need it, yeah.
Okay, so we'll do a pick-me-up for our friends in Seattle. Share the show with them. On Instagram, you can find us at Two Birds on a Bat Show. You can also find us on lineupmediagroup.fm, home of Yo Radio. Download it for free today. All right. You know, Ben, I was just looking at the standard slash line that we've talked about for years, the stuff that ended up on the back of a baseball card. I jokingly say that for guys like you, Zach Gifford, and I'll even throw Mo's algorithm, you guys have sucked the fun out of my baseball cards. But I was looking at batting average, and I went back 15 years, and just so happens the Cardinals were World Series champions that year, although it wasn't that fun of a team to watch the regular season due to injuries. But
yeah.
I was looking at, hey, you know, why does it seem so rare that guys are hitting even near 300 or over 300? So I just looked real quickly, did a scan of guys that hit over 300. So there were 38 in the major leagues.
Guys in 2006.
That hit, yeah, the guys that hit at or above 300. And I look at 2019 because I didn't want to go to 2020. It was a 60-game sample size. I don't really put much stock into it. So you had guys like LeMahieu hitting almost 380. I don't care. I don't want to look at that. So I looked at 2019. There's only about 19, you know, about half as many that are hitting for that high of average. Now, I get it. Batting average tells you what happened. It tells you whether a guy hit safely or not, or, you know, what was the percentage of this guy hitting safely in his number of at-bats, official at-bats. So I understand that it kind of tells you what happened. Also look at that number, and I'm like, yeah, if it's 280 or above, these are guys that are making contact enough to get on base safely more often. And so to me, I don't know if that's any less valuable than a guy who the majority of the time they made contact, they made really good contact, or their exit velocity was this every time they barreled one. Batting average makes so much more sense to me, but I know I'm missing something, because what I hear is it's not irrelevant, but there are other statistics out there that are more relevant or tell you more. So what are some of those?
So, yeah, batting average, I don't find it irrelevant as somebody who likes the advanced stats at all. I feel like we talked about just a few moments ago with that fifth hole, if I could have somebody in the fifth hole like Tommy Edman hit in 2018 where I've got this – or 2019, sorry – where I've got this guy who can hit 300 and drive the ball in the gaps with runners on base, that's much better than a guy hitting 220 that gets on at the same rate OBP-wise, you know, because – he's moving the runners around when they're on. When you have a leadoff hitter, batting average matters very little to me as a leadoff hitter if your on-base percentage is ridiculous, like Matt Carpenter's was from 2012 to 2018, then just put that guy first because who's going to be on in front of him, really, the pitcher? And so especially in the NL, that OBP is king at the top of the order, I feel like. So on-base percentage and batting average kind of go hand-in-hand for the most part, but it adds in the walks and the hit-by-pitches and all that. That's a little more important to me than batting average in most situations. Now, when you have runners on base, that turns around a little bit, and you kind of got to look at both for me at least. What I tend to gravitate towards, I do like the batting average on-base percentage, slugging, OPS, just quadruple slash line that that back of the baseball card slash line, just I feel like it's one that you can get a picture in your head of what kind of hitter the guy is almost right away. OPS plus or WRC plus, those are ones, if they have a plus behind their standing or behind their acronym there, it's one that tells you that the big websites, FanGraphs or Baseball Reference or Baseball Savant, has taken the time to figure out what league average is and how the ballpark affects that league average. And it scales it to 100 being completely league average. If it's a plus stat like OPS plus, WRC plus, then each one above that is 1% better than that league average. So if I told you that Dylan Carlson in 2021 ends up with a 120 OPS plus, that means that his OPS was 20% better than league average for the ballparks he played in the league that he played in. So in the National League, playing at Busch Stadium 81 times and then other places less often, that he was 20% better than league average.
So it's a stat that tries to remove the factors of the ballpark, right? It tries to, okay.
Yes. So it tries to remove, like, I just had a conversation the other day about Dante Bichette with somebody and how it was one of those big years. I'm looking it up right now. But in 1999, the guy hit 298 with a 354 on base, a 541 slugging, and 895 OPS. He had 38 doubles, 34 triples, 104 runs, 133 RBI in Colorado. Mm-hmm. Well, that was 102 OPS plus. He was 2% better than league average that year. And the reason is because it was Colorado, and the height of it being Colorado without a humidor. And I wish I could find this quickly enough, but I want to say that league average there was like 872 or 882 or 878 or something like that. That was the average OPS for everybody at Coors Stadium that year. And so at Coors Field. And so that's what it tries to do. It tries to take that into context of where did this guy play? And Busch Stadium is getting to be more and more, it seems like, as they build more and more out in left center, past left center across the street there, as they build more and more, it's becoming more and more a pitcher's park. That kind of is what had me worried about Arenado coming here. I have no idea what to project for him. I mean, I made my projection for him anyway, but it was hard to try to figure out because Busch just affects fly balls and line drives so much,
especially into the gap, right? I mean, that's
yeah.
If you don't believe what you read or what you know about Nolan Arenado is that he goes to left center quite often. In fact, I think it was in Colorado that he hit quite a few. And Busch Stadium, we're going to see something a little different, right? He still might go there, but I mean, I think it goes without saying, right? Like, the home run total is definitely going to be down. When you remove, 78 games, you take 78 of your games you're normally used to playing at Coors Field, and all of a sudden you take those away. I mean, duh, right? I mean, his power numbers are going to go down.
Yes, I agree.
It's just how far, right?
Right, exactly. And how discouraged does he get? I feel like in 2018 for Ozuna, 2019 for Goldschmidt, I feel like at some point they were getting discouraged. Mm-hmm. And you could just see on their faces sometimes where they just tattoo this ball out to left center. And even if it dropped in for a double or if they flew out, you could just see them just shaking their heads. I feel like it does have an effect on people. Another one I like is WOBA, WOBA. I don't know how much the fans know about the stat, but what it basically tries to do is it tries to put it on the same scale as on base percentage. So you're talking like amazing would be like 400, you know, just ridiculous would be like 400. If somebody has something in like the 350 to 380 range, they're probably an all-star. If they're around 335, 340-ish, that's probably your average to above average. And so it kind of puts it on that same scale as on-base percentage. But what it does is it gives a linear weight to each aspect of hitting. So singles, doubles, triples, walks, unintentional walks compared to intentional walks. It does not take base running into account, which is something I don't like about it. So stolen bases aren't a thing on it. Hit by pitches are, striking out is, things like that. And what it tries to do is it tries to assign a certain number to how well they correlate with scoring runs, basically. And then it compares that to league average. And then from that comes WRC plus as opposed to OPS plus.
But those are very similar, right?
Yeah, so OPS plus numbers and WRC plus numbers, they are rarely off by more than a couple, but they can be slightly different just because I think WOBA, I think, takes into account certain things more often. Like OPS plus, slugging percentage basically gives you double, it's saying it's doubly good to hit a home run as it is to get a double. And then it's four times as good to get a home run as it is to get a single. And this breaks it down to what the numbers actually show correlate to how many runs you score, as opposed to just assigning total bases type of thing. And OPS plus also kind of double counts things because they have on base and slugging. And so, the way the statistic works, it kind of doubles things up a little bit. And so this is to balance it out more. So I think the on-base percentage becomes more of a factor on WRC plus. So you'll see a guy who has a very big WRC plus, or sorry, a very big on-base percentage, his WRC plus might outshine his OPS plus a little bit. And if the guy's more of a slugger to get his OPS as opposed to on-base, you might see his WRC plus be a little bit worse.
Okay. So, you know, I think for most of us that are used to the more standard or classic statistics, I think part of what our barrier is just understanding what those baseline numbers are. Like, what is average? I mean, the OPS plus and weighted runs created plus, that makes sense to me because kind of your average is at 100. When you start looking at the other things like weighted on base percentage, which you were referring to, I think for most of us, just intuitively, just staring down this list of figures here, we kind of like, what the hell am I even looking at? You know, what's good, what's bad? I think that's what some of us struggle with on some of the newer metrics.
Right. And I think that a lot of people struggle with nowadays, what is a good batting average and good on base percentage? Because it has changed so much over the years that, you know, like you said, 15 years ago, 38 guys hit 300. 2 years ago, what did you say, 16, 19?
Yeah. Yeah, that was 2019.
And so, right. And so just knowing that with Driveline and other places like Gymworks and all that, that with these pitchers just going in and creating ridiculous pitches. I mean, they are coming up with new pitches. If you, you see the oh, who's the new, not Hader, the other reliever for the Brewers, just, I mean, that the pitch that he was throwing last year that looked like a changeup slash splitter slash reverse cutter, I don't even know how to categorize it. That Yu Darvish saying, yeah, he basically throws 11 different pitches. That with so many different pitches and coming up with different, you know, different spin on balls coming out of different angle arm angles that batters aren't used to, that it's so hard to hit right now. And that's why there's talk about, you know, do we lower the mound more? Do we push the mound back? Do we, how do we create runs? That's where the,
yeah,
the larger bases down in the minors comes in, you know, the shift being potentially taken away, which I hate. Let the defense play.
Well, let's talk about the shift real quick though, because I believe the shift has a little bit to do with that. And then sort of it's a bunch of factors. I know the shift plays into it. My opinion just on the shift, and as you've got, you know, 9 position players, and I'm including the pitcher in this, you know, he has to throw from the mounds. You know where he's going to be. You know where your catcher's going to be. I kind of have always felt that, all right, well, put your guys wherever the hell you want them. You know, I don't see a problem with that. I know that in sports like football, you know, there are formation rules. You know, you can only have certain guys up on the line. Only certain guys can be back. And, you know, I get it, but I kind of in the mind in baseball, like, hey, you got 8 guys out there, or really 7 if you take away the battery. It's your right to put them wherever you want them. So that's how I kind of feel about that, Ben, that I think teams should be free to play a guy wherever the hell you want. Now, it's at your own risk, but.
Exactly, and yeah. I agree, but football, like the offensive players, yeah, there's rules for where the offensive players have to be, and the only rule for the defensive players is you've got to be behind the line of scrimmage and on the field.
Yeah. Yeah, like you can line them all up like on one side of the field if you want to.
Right. Yep. Kind of like the other 7 guys, you know, you put them between the fair lines and go. and I think that's how it should be. I was having a discussion with somebody the other day on Twitter about this, who they were in favor for it, and I said, you know, I'm not going to say it's why I stopped watching the NBA, but one thing I don't like about the NBA is they've got a foul called illegal defense. I mean, and it's not grabbing a guy and dragging him down. It's standing in the wrong spot for 3 seconds. And that just blows my mind that, I mean, you've got, my mind goes blank as soon as I get behind a microphone. Who's the awesome Syracuse coach, the 2-3 defense?
I have no idea.
Anyway, Syracuse men's basketball has the coach that he runs that awesome 2-3 defense, and it's one that it works in college. But in the NBA, it probably wouldn't work right now because of all the perimeter shooting and a 2-3 not being very good for that, but they wouldn't be allowed to play it. Like, that's stupid to me. I don't get it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. But I think we're kind of on the same page with this one. You've got 7 position players out there, your own risk, but put them wherever you think you want them. And if guys can't, for some reason, cannot figure out how to not hit into a shift, I mean, correct that problem, not the defense. That's kind of what I'm thinking. Matt Carpenter, if you cannot, for some reason, cannot bring yourself out of consistently hitting into a shift, it's right there in front of your face. And if you can't figure it out, I don't know what to tell you. Now, a lot of that has to do with how pitchers are pitching them. They're trying to pitch to that, right? But I put it more on the hitter. You want to fix the problem, fix the hitter.
Funny stat.
Here's
a funny stat.
I like funny stats. Let's go.
Matt Carpenter hit better with the shift on from 2016 to 2018 than he did with the shift off.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how to explain it. I don't know how to explain that. You're one of those few guys that if I say something like that, you're going to about to correct me. I didn't know that.
I don't know how to explain it either, but he did.
Okay.
He had better numbers when the defense lined up in a shift, in an infield shift.
Okay. Fine.
Blows my mind. I haven't looked. I have looked. I haven't committed to memory if that was the case in 2019 and 2020 or not. But, yeah, that blew my mind.
All right. Before I roll into the next thing here, I just want to take a second to thank our featured partners. starting with Mike and his wonderful crew at Adams Smokehouse. They're opening back up, folks. They're located on Watson Road. And Adams is home to the best barbecue in St. Louis. They do big box orders. They'll do catering and in-house dining when it's safe, and they're able to do it. But if you want the full experience, head on down to Adams Smokehouse. Check out their awesome menu. You are not going to be disappointed. That's our friends at Adams Smokehouse, St. Louis. Here's your cue. Don't forget our friends at GatorsBaseballAcademy.com, located in both Missouri and Illinois. If you're looking for the right organization to help your youngster with a game of baseball or softball, look no further than the Gators Baseball Academy and their four-pillar system. To learn more, check them out at GatorsBaseballAcademy.com. Okay, this next question I'm going to throw out here, Ben, it comes to us on the Patterson Tire and Service text line. It allows us to hear from you, the fans. Please give our friends at Patterson Tire and Service an opportunity for your business. Patterson Tire Service is a whole lot more than a tire store, as they also specialize in automotive repair. Give them a call at 618-797-6711 for a quick quote and set up an appointment today. Head on down to 3718 Highway 111 in Granite City, Illinois, to find out why they are the best in the business. That's Patterson Tire and Service, a whole lot more than a tire store. Okay, fun one. I mentioned his name earlier. Harrison Bader, right? So the question really is, that was sent to us, is he right now, as things stand, is he your center fielder? Is he your starting center fielder as you go into that? How confident are you in that, Ben?
He's my starting center fielder to start with, at least. He was somehow one of the better hitters on the team last year. He is a fantastic defender. I don't think that I give him quite the leash that others might. Of course, if it's up to me, I've got Bader, Carlson, Thomas, and O'Neill all getting 500-plus plate appearances this year. I kind of make sure that we know what we have in all four of them before next season starts. Of course, I would have started that last year, including I would have started that 2 years ago, and if possible, and tried to see who I have out of more people, but it didn't happen. But he's such a good defender that, I mean, he's obviously nowhere close to as impactful as like an Ozzie Smith or a Yadier Molina because of the position he plays, but his defense is that good to be at that level of defense. Yadi is involved with every single pitch, every single play. Ozzie was involved with, you know, a lot more ground balls on the infield in that era, but Bader's level of defense is to that point where he is that good. Now, the problem for that is if he doesn't hit, Lane Thomas's defense isn't that far behind him. Tyler O'Neill has shown he's already got a gold glove. Now it's for left field, so it's compared against a different set of peers. So Bader is going to have to hit a little bit, at least, in order to keep that spot. Now, 2020 was a small sample, but he saw over 200 breaking pitches last year, and he actually did okay. He only hit 205 on them, but he, compared to what he'd been doing, his WOBA on those was 280, which is still below average. But when you look at 160 the year before, 240 the year before that, 255 the year before that, it was his best year against breaking pitches. He whiffed on less than 30% of them for the first time ever. He's showing some improvements there.
You know,
I don't know what else you wanted to get into.
That was, I just wanted to, where, you know, I think the question came in, just kind of where do we stand at this point? You know, are we calling him our starting center fielder? I am too. And I think until you have somebody that stands out so much that they kind of force their way in there, I think they're starting out with him in center field. I don't necessarily have a problem with that. I don't know what your no doubt better opportunity is, because there isn't one right now. And one hasn't presented itself. So he's your guy. You know, you have, it goes without saying, you have plus defense in center field with him there. Kyle Reese, who had on a few weeks ago, did point out that, yes, with all that speed, but he's still a terrible base runner. So if they can sharpen up that part of his game, that would be a plus. And offensively, that's where he's frustrated most fans. It's not been, it hasn't been for his defense. It's been for the offense. We know this. And look, his poor offensive performance stands out when the rest of the team isn't that great. You know, St. Right. Louis is an outfield ranked terrible last year. They were in the, you know, bottom five teams consistently, if you look metric over metric. So as much as, you know, we talk about, hey, he's improved a little bit, is it still enough? Because I went to look up, I think it was WRC plus, or it was OPS plus, one of the two. I went to look up, hey, just all outfield. I think it was on Fangraphs, so it was WRC plus. I wanted to look at all the outfielders. Where did the St. Louis outfielders even rank among all of them? And they only listed 58. Not one of them were on there except Tommy Edman. Tommy Edman was listed as an outfielder on there. And so that tells you, look, while they might improve, Ben, are they really going to be able to improve that much to even be close to average? At least a couple right. of them. And, you know, with Dexter Fowler now being gone, which I think that was a good move on their part, and I wish him luck out with the Angels. I wish it would have worked out better for him here, but it just didn't. But now I think what you're going to have, and I think you said it before, you're going to have all four outfielders playing everywhere. And I think they should until, you know, something can get established here. You know, O'Neill, while having a great spring, we love seeing that. You know, he has to bring it consistently during the year in order to get it to stick. And this is probably his final, with the Cardinals at least, you know, his final chance to be able to do that. And I think it'll be a sustained chance finally. You know, Bader's got something to prove offensively. You know, his approach changed. Can he be better? We'll see what we got in Dylan Carlson. And then Justin Williams, do they even know if they have options with him? Did they ever figure out that conundrum?
I asked that question of Derek Gould and others the other day, and I believe as of a day or two ago, I had not heard otherwise. Yeah. I have heard that other teams are hearing about theirs. I don't know if just the Cardinals haven't released the information or what.
Well,
I don't know.
I guess if they don't know, we expect him on the opening day roster, I would think. I don't know where that leaves Austin Dean or anybody else. But while we're on some of these other players that there are questions around, what's just your thought on John Nogalski? I talked to him years ago. I think it was a little over 2 years ago when he was with the Cardinals. I think he was at Springfield at the time. But looking really good in the spring, I don't know where they would put him. They've got so many outfielders right now. I don't think they're testing him out in the outfield. I don't think they have any plan to do that. He's a first baseman, good defensively, having a pretty good spring. Is he facing the tough competition? Probably not a lot. But what's your take on Nogalski? Is there a role on this team at all for him? He's a right-handed hitter, so it's not even like he's a left-handed bat. So what do you think?
Right. I think that if Williams can start in the minors, I'm pretty sure Dean can. I think Dean has options. If Williams has an option, I could see him being on the bench and being a bench bat, because that would give you the starting eight plus Lane Thomas, assuming he's not starting. Mm-hmm. So that's nine. Kisner makes 10. A backup infielder, you're guessing like a Sosa, it would be my theory, and either Edmund or Carpenter. That makes 12, and you're going to keep 13. So Nogalski could be that 13th if we only need four outfielders. And it might be worth it to have that bat on the bench, and he can just be your first pinch hitter, you know. He's not going to be a late-game sub for Goldschmidt defensively. Goldschmidt's a former Gold Glover, I believe. Mm-hmm. Multiple Gold Glover, I believe.
Well, I mean, how much did the defense improve last year? It wasn't that the infielders improved. Having him at first base, right, in 2019 made a world of difference, and it made that defense that much better. And I would think that, you know, spelling Goldie, giving him some rest every so often, you've got a great defensive first baseman in Nogalski, pretty strong, right, defensively. That's maybe where I can see him. I don't know that you test him in the outfield. There's just too many people that they have to, I don't want to say tryouts, not the right term, but kind of is, right? I mean, they've got all these outfielders you want to try out. So why put an infielder out there to block your experiment?
I agree completely, but we've seen Schilt put Tommy Edmund out there repeatedly as well, and Ron Helruvelli.
I know our buddy Kyle. I know our buddy Kyle loved to see that too. You call up an outfielder out of the minor leagues and you play Tommy Edmund in right field.
Is that the reason Randy Arozarena did what he did last year for the Rays?
Maybe. I don't think we'll. He's a nice player. I don't know how we see that from a full season from him again.
Arozarena. No, he's not going to be. He's not going to be Babe Ruth.
Oh, I hope not. But right. You know, look, we're kind of getting up. I know we both have to stop here soon. So I wanted to just touch on the pitching real quick. Look, I think a testament to the organization for always having depth, it seems, right? They always have options. But there's a big question mark around Miles Michaelis. And although we got some good news on KK, that's not a for sure thing either. Plus, he's not even been in a rotation for a full major league season yet. He still might have a little bit of an unknown factor to the rest of the league because a lot of guys haven't seen him. It was limited action last year. So what do you think of him as a starter? Were you high on that, Ben, or was it just kind of like, I don't know, because I'm in a spot where I don't know. In theory, it sounds like it could work. He'd be a nice addition to that rotation, but I don't know where I stood with him anyway before an injury or before an injury concern happened.
Right, right. I like KK in the rotation. I think he's got enough deception. I think he's got enough good pitches to... I think he could have been a good starter. My projections loved him more than I did. With an injury at 33 years old, almost 33 years old,
mm-hmm.
With an injury, you never know at that point. You know, is it the Matt Carpenter thing where he's got a bad back and all of a sudden he can't hit anymore? Is it a Michaelis thing where he can't come back, or I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw even with Carlos Martinez, who's not yet 30, he had that injury back in 2018 when he was still pitching lights out and he was able to come back and do it in relief and be awesome in relief in 2019. And then 2020 happened, and who knows what in the heck went on in 2020 with him.
Well, yeah, you don't know how much of it could have been a factor of COVID fog. Like that seems to be what happened to Lane Thomas last year.
Yeah, that's true too. And Carlos was one that went down with that. So, but yeah, just when people start, I mean, injuries are just such a tricky thing. Yeah, the Cardinals' depth is going to be tested early, but like I said earlier in the podcast, I feel like if one thing the Cardinals can do, it's continue to just crank out starting pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
And just looking at their bullpen, I mean, right now they still have Flaherty, Wainwright, Martinez, Gant, Reyes, Cabrera, Ponce de Leon, Woodford, Helsley was a starter in the minors. And then we haven't even discussed Johan Oviedo. Angel Rondon got added to the 40-man roster. Kyle and I have talked a bit about him on Conversations with Cerruti lately about the dude just has incredible pitchability. We haven't gotten into probably the two biggest names in the minors, which are Matthew Liebichor and Zach Thompson. And then even one more name beyond that is Tommy Parsons has pitched lights out this spring. And so, yes, they've got the depth. We'll see how good it is this year, it looks like, if Michaelis can't start it and KK is unsure.
How nice would it have been, though, to pick up an Odorizzi, somebody who could eat innings, had a little bit of, you know, a more of a known factor. 2020 was odd for him, but it was odd for everybody. That would have been a nice insurance policy, I think.
Potentially. Yeah. I mean, it's not my money. So, yeah. Sure.
Or it's not mine either.
But I don't know if I like Odorizzi for 3 years over all or any of those guys either. Just like I don't know if I would have liked a James Paxton or there was somebody else people were talking about a lot for a while there that for 3 years, I mean, I don't know if I'd rather have that.
Well, it depends on what you expect from them, though, right? If you needed an innings eater somewhere in your rotation, something that was a little bit lower of a risk, you know, not such a financial burden, that would have been a nice kind of thing to have. Reminds me of almost like a Jeff Suppan signing or something like that back in the day. Where
also reminds me of a Mike Leake, though, where wanting to get rid of him a year later or less.
Yeah, that was a bad one. It's hard to believe that I think we held on to Cecil longer. But anyway, I don't want to
one guy can give you exactly what we signed him for, was being able to throw innings, not necessarily quality innings, but being able to throw innings, whereas the other one couldn't do that anymore. So,
yep. All right, Ben, I know we got to get running here, but what are you working on next for Birds on the Black?
So finishing up our projection series there, I'm trying to crank them out as much as I can. I'm on spring break this week, so I got in 3 one day. I've already put up 2 this morning. I'm having a lot of difficulty getting to some of them just due to, you know, I had Michaelis's ready to go, and then we found out he's not even going to pitch this spring for now. I had KK's kind of ready to go, and then trouble happened there. And that slows down me getting Gant and Reyes and Ponce de Leon's out because I'm trying to get innings as correct as possible.
Yeah, I think when you put those out, you should leave your previous ones there, but just use the strike through feature just so we can see what you were thinking.
I could do that. I mean, I might need to. You know, it might get to be March 25th or something, and we don't know what's going to happen with them, so I might just have to do that. We'll see. Working on a couple more guests this week, actually, for Conversations with Cerruti. I'm going to talk to scoreboard aficionado Stu Stiles. I'm going to hopefully get Kyle back on. I'm going to talk to Corey Sanzone tomorrow, actually, just about how the spring is going, kind of like we talked today. And then I'm going to be on Meet Me at Musial with Daniel and Alan on Friday night. So I think those usually come out on Saturdays. So
that's right.
Got a bunch of podcasts going.
Yeah, I know. And they've been great. I've listened to the last one. I got to catch up because the last one I listened was you and Kyle. And you can, by the way, you can follow Kyle at C70 for those of you asking. Ben, thanks for spending a little bit of time here this afternoon to just chat a little baseball. I needed to get a show in here for Ruffled Feathers. I traveled last week. My son turned 16, which is still head scratching how time has flown by this fast. But
so did he drive you back home when coming with you? Or?
No. he's not licensed yet. I know it takes a little bit longer these days for kids to get that. But no, he was not behind the wheel. Thank God. I don't know if I could have taken that. But so it was a week of traveling. So it was a little bit delayed getting a show up. But Ben, I appreciate you jumping on here last minute to just talk about what's happening in spring training and about what you're doing next for Birds on the Black. It's always great to catch up with you. Where can people follow you on Twitter?
I am at STLFanBC7.
All right. And you guys can follow me at TOR_Ron75. Got to add that 75. I don't know who TOR_Ron is, but that account's been suspended. Unrelated to me. Ben, thanks for jumping on once again. And just want to remind everybody real quick, you can follow us at twobirdsonabat.com. You can subscribe to the podcast there. It takes only about 30 seconds. We're located on Twitter at Birds on a Bat Show. You can find us on Facebook. Just search Two Birds on a Bat. And on Instagram, you can find us at Two Birds on a Bat Show. And you can always find us on lineupmediagroup.fm, home of your radio. All right, folks, we'll be back at it again next week. Until then, love y'all so much. Bye-bye, everyone. Let's go, Birds.